We're talking astrology tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Mark Lerner with us. Some of your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Mark Lerner with us. Hey, Mark, the Edward Snowden case, the NSA whistleblower, you've looked a little bit at him astrologically speaking as well. What do you see?
I actually don't have his chart right in front of me, but when I did look at it, I'm just pulling it up with the computer. His chart was extraordinary, or is extraordinary, as I was looking at it a couple of months ago, and it timed a very interesting new moon in May, when the asteroid Pallas, which in astrology has a lot to do with intelligence and brilliance, that in mundane astrology winds up connecting to organizations that are working with safety, security, intelligence, and things like that. He's actually born the last day of Gemini, almost exactly at the summer solstice. But what's interesting, I wanted to mention before we go to the phones, how powerful the moon is. Most people do not realize how we are all linked and relate so much to the moon, because when we're born, we can't feed ourselves, we can't take care of ourselves, we need a mother, a female figure, or a parent, or a group of figures to help nurture us. And so our moon signs represent much more of who we are in our personality lives. This person came as a Scorpio moon, and as a lot of people know in the field of astrology, whether sun sign of Scorpio or moon in Scorpio or several planets in Scorpio represents the whole world of detectives and spying and research and delving into things. So it's not surprising that it led him into the life that, you know, he became the center of the world's attention here in the last few months.
Okay, you believe astrology works. You've been doing this all your life. Simply speaking, how does it work? I mean, my gosh, who would think that planetary alignments and things going on would affect our lives? So how does that work?
Well, I was thinking, you know, in the last 24 hours, a question that could come up, because I love astronomy, and I have a magazine that I read religiously, and people might think, you know, after all your work, you know, it would be an astrology one. It's astronomy. It comes out of Wisconsin. It's a beautiful, incredible magazine. And what I want to say here is the great astrologers always realized that astrology was applied astronomy. It's applied cosmic mathematics. And what's happening is here's the difference. Astronomers are looking out there and they see a star, supernova, galaxies, clusters, the Milky Way, black holes, all these different things. And what fascinates them is, wow, there's this universe out there. It's so mysterious. We're the small dot on a little planet. We're 26,000 light years from the center of the Milky Way. We have billions of stars in our galaxy, and there are billions of galaxies. So it's awesome, because you start realizing we're all part of this like magnificent pageantry, and kind of, if we can hear it, of amazing sound and light, and it's just extraordinary. But the thing is that when you're born on Earth, getting back to that Jung idea, whatever or whoever is born at a moment of time has the qualities of that moment of time. What most people do is, like, they think of time as like, I'll see you at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We'll meet at that cafe and we'll have a discussion or discuss what we're going to do, or we'll have a web meeting and so on at a particular time. And everybody's using time as a kind of convenience system. What Jung was really talking about, and he did study astrology, is that time has a power. Okay, there's a power in every second, every minute. And part of the power is coming from the astrological pattern in that place at that particular time. And it's as if whatever, like if you get an amazing idea or an event happens or you meet somebody, if you have that exact moment, just like the birth of a baby or the birth of an idea for an organization or whatever it may be, that astrological pattern becomes like a spiritual genetic code, and it has a life from that point onward, okay? And that has a power. And if we can analyze through the history of astrology what the sun means, the moon means, Mercury, Venus, all the different planets have different meanings, the signs have different meanings, and you have to do all this juggling around in order to make the best interpretation you can. And then you look forward so many days, weeks, months, and years, and you see where everything has moved, and that prevents that creates the challenges and the opportunities that are going to happen in that life.
Is it true that because Pluto was taken out of the planetary system, made a planetoid, that it pushed everything back by a month?
No.
That's what I hear. I hear these rumors.
No. And the whole thing, you know, what actually happened there in the Czech Republic in 2005 in late August, 10% of the astronomers were still there when the decision was made to you know, hands raised, who wants to make Pluto into a dwarf planet? And then they, but they raised, and this is very interesting, when Pluto was made into a dwarf planet, they raised Ceres, the first asteroid, when it was discovered New Year's Day of 1801 by a Sicilian astronomer. He thought he had found a planet. In fact, the first four asteroids in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, I know you've had Tom Van Flandren a lot about the whole, you know, exploding planet hypothesis on the show many times.
You know he's passed on, though.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm so sorry to hear that.
He died about 2 years ago.
So. Well, you know, he brought so many fantastic ideas, and I, you know, used to read everything and hear what he was saying. Well, the whole idea that there may have been one planet maybe a long time ago, something happened there, and we have the remains of it. But somehow or another, and we still have this mission, the Dawn spacecraft, which NASA launched and has already been to Vesta, is moving on, and we'll see Ceres. In fact, 2 days ago, in one of the science articles, they feel very, very strongly when we get to, when the cameras get to Ceres on the Dawn spacecraft in 2015, they think that there's ice, like a whole ocean of ice, just like with Europa near Jupiter and Enceladus with Saturn, that the new Dawn may discover when it gets to Ceres that there's water, which opens the whole door to microorganisms throughout the whole solar system. And there's also New Horizons launched in 1995 that gets to Pluto and the moons of Pluto the same year. And who knows what we'll find 3 billion miles away at Pluto.
Do you ever see anything with astrology that is so horrendous you don't want to tell anybody?
Well, it's not horrendous necessarily, but November 1 is coming up, and it's another one of these Uranian-Plutonic square days, at the same day that Earth, Mercury, and the Sun are lined up in the solar system. And there's 10 alignments, 8 of which are formed by the Sun and Mercury. What happens when I do the cosmic calendar is some dates there's almost nothing happening, George, you know, just a trickle of alignments. And then somehow or another, I always think of it as the universe of the cosmos ganging up on Earth and humanity. Suddenly, out of nowhere, you'll go from a day with like 2 or 3 alignments or maybe one, and the moon is meandering around making maybe one alignment. And the next day, there's like 14 alignments. And November 1 is one of those dates. And I wouldn't call it horrendous because there are actually some harmonious alignments, but it is one of the strongest crisis-oriented days in the near future because these two outer planets are once again exactly at odds with each other.
Well, that's true. Let's take some calls here. Regina is going to be our first caller in Long Beach, California. Hello, Regina.
Hi. I don't know, 829-51, do you see any kind of financial change? I mean, I don't know what we can ask, but coming up for this year, nah.
Well, again, the usual thing of what we try to do is not necessarily, I don't usually do this kind of work in the sense of my work with mundane astrology, but on an individual level, one has to really look at the chart, take time, because like I said before, it's not just your sun sign, which of course is Virgo, sun sign Virgo, but one would have to look at the moon and Mercury and the different planets and then make sure that the time was being used, you know, correctly. The thing is that what I'll say for the moment here is we were talking about the comet Ison. And the comet Ison is going to hit its what's called perihelion, its closest approach to the sun, in Sagittarius, at the point which it will make what we call a square, a right angle to where your sun is located in the sign of Virgo. So what you want to do is sort of tune in to all the stuff on the web about comet Ison. And even though a square is sometimes intimidating, it means work has to be done. So for all Virgos out there, born around August 29, what you want to do is sort of stay focused and grounded in kind of whatever it is that your decision-making process is, not to go kind of overboard, because the strength of Virgo is to be strongly analytical, not to get too critical of yourself or other people around you, and just like to read and to study as much as you can in the field of economics. And the more you read and study, probably the more successful you'll be. But in general, we don't usually do instantaneous readings because it's too hard to, I want to make sure that what I say is accurate. I have to look at a whole chart to be able to do that.
You know, when you do astrological charts on people, what seems to be the most important thing?
Well, I was saying before, you know, one of the things that is, I have found, and when I first started doing this, I got a few very interesting books, and two were by a fellow who actually lived near where I was learning in New York City, Astrology, the Space Age Science, by a fellow named Joseph Goodovich. And that was what turned me on, George, to the fact, and I was amazed, Galileo, Copernicus, Sir Isaac Newton, they were all astrologers, even though they were some of the greatest scientists and physicists in history. And in that book, he described how earthquakes and tornadoes and different acts were, there would be planets overhead in those locations, like Neptune might be overhead or another outer planet might be under the Earth and so on. And then the next book was something like Write Your Own Horoscope. And what I started studying there was the moon, because the moon is so related, as I said before, we're really more of our moon signs. And as I looked at my parents and my sisters, my friends, anybody, you know, looked up their birthdays and found out where is their moon, I realized that we were all very much, much more our moon signs in terms of our personalities and our feelings. And some people, I always say to people, we have to grow into our sun sign. The woman who just called, born August 29.
Regina.
Yeah, we don't know, unless I start looking it up and to make sure, because the moon can move very quickly. It's the moon sign that is where we live in our feelings and our emotions and our instincts in order to then grow into our sun sign and hopefully use that to the best of our ability. And then if we know the time of birth, it leads to more of the future rising sign, the sign on the eastern horizon, which is more of the higher potential, if and when both the moon and the sun are operating on the highest levels possible, then maybe the rising sign, if we know it, that can work in terms of our future higher destiny.
Let's go to Marianne in Blairstown, New Jersey. Hi, Marianne. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I was wondering how you would go about finding a reputable and knowledgeable astrologer. And I was wondering if there are any that do readings for animals, too. I have two lovely cats who are Geminis,
yeah,
and I would love to find out more about them. And if you don't know, I'll just ask Art Bell on Monday.
Okay. Well, what I would recommend is if you go to my website and send me an email, there are a number of astrologers I've known over the years, and maybe I'll be able to. I don't know any offhand who will do cat and dog horoscopes, but it's not that different from human beings. I mean, it's the same kind of thing, because as Jung said, anyone or anything born at a moment of time has the qualities of that moment of time, and each dog and each cat and any kind of animal has an astrological chart. Okay, and it works. They may not have a career unless they go out to TV like a Rin Tin Tin or Lassie or something like that, you know, or commercials. But nevertheless, you can see the compatibility between the owner, and if you have family members and children and the animal, and one could even in theory select, you know, if you know that you're into a certain breed of dogs or a certain kind of cat, and you know, the female is about to give birth. One can actually orchestrate a kind of astrological compatibility.
Can you tell if a baby is going to have a certain kind of life by their birth date?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, you have Glynis McCann's on a lot. You know,
yep, the numbers lady.
Yeah, well, numbers lady. So astrology has numbers all over the place. Okay, so there's what we call progressive astrology. Everybody has a chart. There's actually several ways of seeing the unfolding progressive chart, aside from one's birth chart. So when you do a chart for a baby, which is a very interesting kind of thing, you can look ahead, you can see things like the so-called Saturn return, you know, when will they be having career cycle, you know, what will happen in the teens, you know, are there particular years that the parents should watch out for if a planet becomes stationary and slows down or goes retrograde in what we call the progress chart, if there are what we call major transits, you know, 2 years in the future, 5 years, 20 years, you could actually pinpoint a whole lot of years and a whole lot of time periods when that child is going to be challenged, or like enormous opportunities will open up, or major difficulties. But of course, you can do all the stuff I said earlier. You can look at a chart for career potential, relationship potential, health, business, intellect, you know, whatever it may be.
Well, Mark, you know, when you were doing all this, when you were learning this, did you study with someone or do this on your own?
I was looking to, like I said before, I was trying to find something after college, after graduating Michigan State. I traveled in Europe, came back, and I was kind of lost. I went to English graduate school at New York University. And then my dad was a medical doctor, and I thought maybe I would practice medicine. So I tried to go to pre-med. I took pre-med classes at Columbia University, and it was the first day of chemistry that of the pre-med classes that I came home and got that book about astrology. So it was I had a path between doctor of the body and doctor of the psyche. And after a few months at taking these pre-med classes, I walked out of a organic chemistry class, and I decided I have to dedicate myself to astrology. What I did was I used about a whole year and studied and restudied. I got all these Dane Rudyard books, particularly in Dr. Mark Edmund Jones. There was a great bookstore in Lower Manhattan, and I would go there, and there were some people there who said, here are the books that you need. These are the best astrologers. Learn from them. And there were British astrologers and other people. And in those days, you didn't have as much astrology as we have now, but a lot of the astrologers were amazing. So I did not have a teacher, although there was a fellow I went to on Saturday sometime and on the east side of Manhattan. He had a class, and that was like extra. But I basically learned by extreme memorization. In one book in particular, The Astrology of Personality from Dane Rudyard in 1936, I reread that book, and I created like 35 pages back and forth on yellow lined paper, and I would walk around my room and I would try and memorize like that. I could see everything about the zodiac, the planets, the houses, alignments, how everything worked, and backwards as forwards as if I was going to go in front of somebody to get a PhD. But I never did that as a graduate school kind of thing, but it was my own graduate training I developed for myself.
Is there a planet in the solar system, Mark, that is a little stronger than the other ones in terms of astrology?
Well, not really. You know, the thing is, that's when I got into this, it was 1972, and a woman named Eleanor Bach, who passed on about 10 years ago now or so, maybe longer, she was fortunate to come out with the first asteroid ephemeris for those little planets, Ceres, Pallas, Juno, and Vesta, that were discovered in the early 1800s. And that was the time when the feminine movement, you know, now and women for equal pay and equal rights, particularly sweeping through America. And in astrology, one of the problems was when you ask about planets, when you think of mythology, which is where a lot of the archetypal energies originally came from, in other words, Jupiter, Zeus, king of the gods, and so on, Neptune, god of the seas, Pluto, god of the underworld, all the planets except for Venus were named after male deities. And except for Venus as the only female planet, and the moon, which is often considered feminine, but the moon is the Earth's satellite. It's not really a planet, even though it's so powerful in astrology. So there was a ridiculous imbalance of the male force. And once the asteroids came in, what was interesting was, even though they're small, George, and they're in the asteroid belt, these were goddesses. They were named after goddesses who were on Mount Olympus and were equal in power to the male deities.
Hold on for a second, Mark. We're going to come back, talk with you more about this on Coast to Coast AM. We've got a television show called Beyond Belief. It airs on Fridays. I want you to take a look at it for free. As a matter of fact, Lex was telling me we've got about 39 television programs up there now that you can look at for free. So take advantage of it. Just go to beyondbelief.com and fill out the information. And again, it's 10 days free, beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast, Mark Lerner, the astrologer with us, of course. We'll go to your calls in just a second. Mark, of course, graduated from Michigan State University. How did you get involved in astrology, Mark?
Well, it was pretty much an accident there as I was taking those pre-med classes, simply one book, because I thought, like anybody else, most people think that astrology is sun signs. It's what you look in the newspaper or magazines. Okay, this is my sign. So I knew, like other people, okay, I was a sun sign Pisces. And then I suddenly see this book, Astrology, the Space Age Science. I pick it off a bookshelf. I start browsing through it. I start seeing about these scientists, Newton, Galileo, Copernicus, and so on. And I see these charts for earthquakes and other kinds of things. This person had done a remarkable study, including the birth of twins, I mean, what we call time twins, people who were born the same day, maybe in even the same location. The whole idea of the prince and the pauper, that Mark Twain book, where there was a prince and a person born in poverty, and they're born at the same day, same town in London at the same time, and their paths are kind of identical when they get married, accidents that happen, when they reach, you know, a height in their profession and so on, but they're in completely different sociological areas. And so that book started me going. And then I'll never forget, I was with a good friend of mine, and we were going to a movie, and before the movie in the east side of Manhattan, there was a bookstore open, and I suddenly saw a very large book in astrology. And it always makes me laugh when I think about it. I look at it, and it's like about a $15 book. And he looks at me and he says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I think I'm going to buy this." He said, "You already have a book on astrology. Why do you need another one?" And now it's thousands of books later, 41 years. So he just didn't realize that this was going to become my profession. And I didn't realize that either.
Let's go to Pam in Charleston, South Carolina. Hey, Pamela, go ahead.
Hi, I have a silly question for you. And I would love to get on with Glynis McCants one night. I'm a November 76 baby. I'm a Scorpio, obviously. I have no idea what my moon sign is, but I'm also, in the Chinese astrology, a fire dragon. Not just a dragon, a fire dragon. So I'm curious, my question is twofold. Which zodiac is more reliable, the Eastern or the Western? And if it's a combination of the two, how do you get over being your own worst enemy, which is what I think I am with that combination?
What do you know your birth date?
Of course 11, she knows 11. Her birthday. She better.
November what?
I know, 11/11/76.
Okay, for the sake of trying to get you your moon sign in particular, let's see, because in the computer that I have here, hopefully we will, okay, it's coming up right now. November 11, 1976, you'll have your moon is in the sign Cancer, which is also a water sign. And so you're born with what we call a sun-moon trine. Now, that means a lot of water. And you also wind up having Mercury and Mars also in Scorpio, along with an asteroid and one of the outer planets. So you're more heavily emphasizing Scorpio than any other sign. Now, I don't know what a fire dragon necessarily is. I'm not saying that Chinese astrology should not be studied, because, you know, obviously that has a long history, longer than Western astrology, as far as going back, you know, in their civilization. They have different ways of working with wood and metal and different kind of elemental qualities than we have in Western astrology. But it is interesting, you said fire dragon. You have Mars in Scorpio as well as your sun sign, and Mars is the traditional planet, the fire planet, you know, the planet of war, and also ruling Aries and traditionally Scorpio. So you have kind of what I call fire water, very intensive, and yet your moon is in its home sign of Cancer, which emphasizes love of home and family and closeness with relatives. Hopefully you've got good support from your family.
I think it's amazing, Mark, how this works and how you can track it. How far out can you go?
Well, okay, you can go really far out. Like right in front of me, there's a wonderful, what's called an ephemeris, the New American Ephemeris. It runs all the way to 2100. Okay, so we're at 2013. That has every day exactly based on the Jet Propulsion Laboratory highest calculations, where all the planets and the main asteroids, Chiron and what are called the moon's nodes, dragon's head and tail, 87 years into the future. Now, they could go further if they want to, but most people now would not necessarily be buying the ephemeris for the 22nd century, because, you know, that's pretty long way off. But one could, you know, not probably in another 20, 30 years, they'll be coming out with the ephemeris for 100 years for the 22nd century and so on. I mean, we can do it.
All right, let's go to Brandon in Pleasanton, California now. You're up with us. Hi, Brandon. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I was listening to the last caller. They were talking about the Chinese astrology. I've been studying that. There's like a 60-year cycle, so like, that's why, like, grandparents and grandchildren get along so well.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically about 6 years apart.
I like that.
Do you have any comments about that?
Sure. Yeah. As a grandparent myself, I mean, of a young child and growing up and loving my grandparents a whole lot, One of the most remarkable cycles is every 58 to 59 years, almost 60 years, the two largest planets, which literally are the rulers of space, Jupiter, and time, Saturn. Jupiter has a 12-year orbit through the zodiac. Saturn has a 29-year cycle. What happens, or 29 and a half. So what happens is, when you get to almost 60 years old, Saturn has gone around the zodiac twice, and Jupiter, if you take 12 and multiply by 5 orbits, you get 60. So what happens is, you know, in the old days, people didn't necessarily live to be 80, 90 years old, okay? If you made it, like I think in the Bible they talk a lot about 70, there's a number 70 in there, but in most cultures, if you ever got to 60, part of the reason I think that whether in Native American, ancient cultures, people were revered was that there were so many health crises aside from wars and everything else that would kill people off because they didn't know how, you know, medicine being not what it is today with holistic and whatever. So people, if they managed to live to be 60, it was almost like they were instant shamans, because what were they doing that allowed them to live that long? And they were revered as elders. But we do have an astrological signature, which is 5 cycles of Jupiter and 2 cycles of Saturn. And so around 58, 59, 60, this is when people really need to hopefully be really integrated in their careers and their sense of achievement. But there is a kind of linkage between, again, grandparent and grandchild because of some of those age differences that allow those relationships to work a lot better than sometimes, you know, the parent to the child.
Well, no doubt about that. Mark, you know, when people ask you, of course, for some information about their astrological chart, what do they want primarily?
Well, I think, you know, look, people want all the, you know, when people call up and they say, hey, here's my birthday, tell me what's going to happen, you know, about money or whatever it is. I mean, I think interpersonal happiness, I mean, over 41 years, I'd say I've done more thousands of consultations over the years. I used to do a lot of marriage. It's very, very hard, you know, to choose marriage dates for people. It takes a lot of effort. But people are looking for compatibility. I think that's the number one thing, you know, whether just friendship, love, marriage, that kind of thing. Probably the next one, you know, would be both health is always big and career. And then we have what's called relocation astrology now. Since this fellow Jim Lewis has passed away, but he created this whole technique back in the 1970s. We've had it for 30 plus years, and we can move people as long as we know your exact birth time. We can move you anywhere on the planet. We can say, okay, if somebody says I've got a job potential in Hong Kong, you know, I was born in Chicago. What does it look like? And we can do that, and we can compare their own birth chart and move them as if they were born in Hong Kong at the same instant of time, but it's like the chart can flip around, and it's really fascinating. So we have these great tools now that help people do that kind of thing.
Let's go now to Vince in Temecula, California. Hi, Vince, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Sure. I had my chart done previously, but my question involves what you were just talking about was relocation, and there's I received a chart with all these lines and like the planet overlaid on it. And the question I had is that the particular area that I'm interested in moving to is somewhere in the Midwest, and it has Neptune rising on the ascendant going through one of the cities I was interested in. And I just wondered what your take was on that. I'm also a Gemini moon, by the way.
Okay, well, I'm living under a Neptune zone myself, and I wasn't born here, and it wasn't that I deliberately sought this out. But in those charts can be very confusing, and we do have those kind of maps and tools, you know, through what I do on my website. But when you're born, when you move to a place or considering moving, and Neptune is either rising, setting above or below, then you have the both enhancement of Neptune, which would be your creative imagination, psychic sensitivity, things like working with film and movies, music, dance, all the creative arts on a very high level, also very high spiritual energies in that location. But the shadow side, every planet, no matter what, even Venus and Jupiter, they have their shadow sides. And the shadow side, every outer planet, certainly, it has some good qualities and shadow. And the Neptune is illusions, confusion, chaotic conditions, you know, where people could deceive you. So you need to go into that location with a lot of what I call your strong Saturn suit from wherever Saturn is at your birth to be logical, a lot of common sense, you know, practical reality, know what you're getting into if you decide to move there.
And astrologically, you can tell somebody where to go and where to move?
Yeah, I mean, as long as, what usually happens is they've already moved somewhere. They have a birth. I had this with a woman. She was born in California, lived there most of her life. Then she got married to somebody. She was offered a job in Florida. Okay, she went to Florida, 3,000 miles away. We knew her birth time. So she contacts me and said, my life has been miserable. Me and my partner have broken up. My father won't speak to me. The hospital staff and I are not getting along. What is going on here? I thought this was a slam dunk. Well, we did our birth chart. Then we looked at the relocation. She had, I think it was Mars, was exactly at the bottom of her chart. In other words, exactly under the Earth, which represented all this volatility and conflict in the depths of her existence. And it was so exact, George, that I said, this is what's happening. And then she moved back. And I don't know if she restored a relationship with her husband or partner or not, but it was one of those clear-cut cases where the person just, they thought they were opening a really positive door and they weren't. In other cases, somebody could very much luck out, they're offered something, and it's a wonderful shift, and it just works out astrologically.
Let's go next to Maria in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Maria.
Hello.
Hello.
Good to have you with us.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question regarding my chart.
Okay.
All right. Well,
I have it in front of me. I'm not sure how to read it, but I'm a Leo sun sign with a Libra rising and Aries moon.
Okay, well, what actually is your birthday?
August 7th, 66.
Okay, and you do know your time of birth?
Yes, it was 11:01 a.m.
And where were you born?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay, well, we'll try and do this. I normally don't do this, but at any rate, because you may be one of the last callers just to see. And what's your main question?
I don't know how to read the chart exactly, but it seems like a lot of planets and activity, like everything is focused in the 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Right, I see that. Okay, well, the short reading here, first of all, when you have Libra rising, okay, that means Venus is your chart ruler. So just remember that. And it turns out your Venus, again, it's August 7th of 66, right, in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So you got Venus with Mars and Jupiter in a triple conjunction at the top in that 10th house directly above. And that's great for career, okay? So you need to have a career. You need to be out in the public. Your chart shows most of the planets in the upper half of the chart, correct, as you're looking at it? Well, at any rate, you do have most of the planets, almost all of them in the upper half. And that's a signal that you have to be of service to the outside world. And this person, I don't know if you're still listening there. I mean, fundamentally, this is a person who can be wildly successful, perhaps in more than one field, but she is a sun sign Leo, and that usually means the need to be in charge, okay? And that's the important thing, not to be working necessarily behind the scenes, but to somehow have a leadership role in whatever it is, business, you know, entrepreneurial life, that kind of thing.
Mark, why is the time that you're born so important?
Well, because if you don't know the time, every 4 minutes of time, literally every 4 minutes, approximately 1 degree of the zodiac shifts on the eastern horizon. And we look to the east, which is the archetypal sunrise point every day when the sun is rising, gives life locally to wherever we're living. So we look to the east as sort of the point of enlightenment where the sun normally rises, and that's the rising sign. If we don't know the time, George, then what we know is, like, in this case, the woman who called, she's a Leo sun sign. She's got an Aries moon. She's got, in her case, we wouldn't know that she has Libra rising. The 11:01 birth time that she gives allows us to pinpoint what sign was rising and what degree of that sign, because there's 360 individual little degrees, like a circle of 360 in geometry, the same thing. That's what we're working with the zodiac. And so it's a lot of precision. Every 4 minutes of time, it changes on the horizon.
It works. If there's a catastrophe on this planet, a big one,
yep,
what would a chart say?
Well,
what would give you the impression that something huge could happen?
Right. I mean, again, you know, when you asked me, did I see anything horrendous coming up? And I mentioned November 1 is one of the big dates. You know, there are every month that, you know, that we have new moon, full moon. There's usually a couple of planetary alignments ganging up in any particular month, in any year. you know, we'd probably be able to find at least a dozen 1 or 2 day time periods that we'd really be worried about and concerned about. And once in a while, you get some kind of unbelievable thing, like in 1962, at a total solar eclipse in February, early February of 1962, astrologers in India thought the world was ending because the sun, moon, and five planets, seven celestial bodies, were all in Aquarius. And some actually consider that to be the dawning of the age of Aquarius because of all these Aquarian energies, including Jupiter and Saturn, the two largest planets. But in India, they thought of it as the end of the world. Everybody has their own opinions on these particular cycles. I tend, like you asked me before, you know, am I looking ahead for these things? I would prefer to wait until whatever it is seems like it's happening. You know, in some cases, like, you know, with the sunspots, you know, talking about that for 1 second here, back in 1859, on September 1, there was an extraordinary event that if that happened now, you know, we'd be in serious trouble with the electronic grid and everything. You know, they already talked about that. In those days, they only had the telegraph, and it kind of fried the telegraph systems. So I'm thinking, as a lot of the people who probably come on the show, you know, we need to watch the sun. You know, that's where things could get really difficult really fast with things like solar flares, coronal mass ejections, and things like that. So I go to some of those websites, and that's part of my study with astronomy, so that the astrology and the astronomy hopefully converge, and I can tell a little bit ahead of time if we are going to have something pretty intense.
All right, let's go to Monica in Washington, D.C. Squeeze you in here, Monica. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. My question is, and forgive me for not posing the question properly, I'm having so much conflict right now. I was born January 7th, 1964, at 9:55 p.m., and I just need to know which direction to go.
Okay, you're January 7th, and what was the year?
64.
Oh, okay, 1964. And do you know your birth time or no?
Yes, 9:55 p.m.
Yeah. And where were you born?
Born in California.
Oh, in California?
Mark, I got 20 seconds for you.
Oh,
do
boy.
It as fast
okay.
as you can, kid.
Okay, well, I'll make it fast. You're a sun sign Capricorn, and what's happening is Pluto is in that sign, and it's getting closer. And over the next 2 years, you have to work with sort of dying to the old you, being reborn, a lot of catharsis and transformation. That's kind of the key. Right now, that Pluto is on what we call the nodes. So stay in contact with me. Maybe I can help you out.
Great. Mark Lerner's website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com.